Good morning, everybody. Good morning. This morning, I'm going to talk about dimensions of heart-mind. I've been talking about heart-mind quite a bit lately, but talking about it is fine, but really what our practice is about is selling into it. That's what it's about. You can call it heart-mind if you want to, but you don't have to call it anything. And usually our minds, as I've been saying, are just way up here, twisting and turning and doing cartwheels and Ferris wheels and roller coasters. But through our practice, at some point, our mind descends to where it naturally belongs, in our heart, where it naturally belongs. It just descends in its own time, in its own way. We can't get it to descend because this mind that's trying to get it to descend has to just settle down, and then it happens. It happens, and it happens slowly, and it happens suddenly. And today I want to talk about five dimensions of heart-mind. The physical, the mental, the emotional, openness, and full empty. And these come from Sungsan, a third ancestor in our lineage, Bodhidharma, Wei Ko, Sungsan. In about the 9th or 10th century, they put these guys in their lineage because they wanted to make Zen legitimate. So this guy Sungsan, who had written Trust in Heart Mind, they decided was part of our lineage. So cool, wonderful. So I'm going to talk about each of those dimensions, starting first with the physical. So the physical dimension, that's the source of our energy and the main focus of our effort as Zen practitioners. More than in other types of Buddhism, we emphasize the physical. We anchor ourselves in the tactile, in our smells, in the textures, in the tastes, in the sounds, in the sights, so we can experience the world with a little more immediacy. So many years ago, when I lived in San Francisco and I practiced Zen there, I ran into my teacher on the street. And I was surprised to see him. I was kind of delighted, but not totally delighted because I looked kind of sloppy. But that's another story. That's a whole other story. I didn't want to look sloppy in front of him. Anyway, and I passed him, and he said, "Look what I have." And then he had a brown grocery bag. And I looked in the bag. There were spinach, red tomatoes, yellow squash, purple onions, myriads of colors and textures. Delightful, fresh, wonderful. And I was immersed in the physical before the intrusion of judgment, the intrusion of criticism, the intrusion of ideals. There's a vitality. You notice this when you do your physical practice, don't you? There's that vitality there. And then he said to me, and this is in my first book, and he said to me, "Only 2 days old." I don't know if he'd been dumpster diving or what. He said, well, he was a monk. You know, he was from Japan where you just, that's a whole other story. That's a whole other dharma talk. Only 2 days old. Then I looked in the in the bag again, and all of a sudden, everything looked brown and shriveled. And I even thought maybe I saw some molds and some wounds, some worms. Disgusting. I was afraid he was going to invite me to dinner. So I said, "Sensei, I got to go." And I went down the street pretty fast. Pretty fast. The physical dimension invites us to just experience what is directly. And if I hadn't been so swept up immediately by my judgments, almost fresh vegetables. He made a bowl of soup, 2 days old. Fine in soup. Better than what the Japanese had during World War II and after World War II. Much better. But my heart mind completely closed down because of fear and repulsion. No, that happens. That's not negative, but we can just notice that. The physical dimension, we have a chance every time. How I moved my chair across the floor just before I did this talk. How I moved it across the floor. Just moving it, not doing anything else, just trying to take care of the chair, take care of the floor. How we handle our food, 2 days old, fresh, 3 days old, how we handle it. Physical, it opens up, it's up to heart mind. Another story, which is also in my first book. So when I lived at the Zen monastery in California, Tassajara, a new teacher came from Japan. His name was Chino Sensei. Later he became Chino Roshi. He's not alive anymore. And my teacher, Suzuki Roshi, called him over from Japan, if that's the right word, because Chino was an expert at ritual. He'd been in charge of ritual at a Heiji monastery. He'd been the chidan for 2 years at a Heiji monastery. Mm-hmm. And Suzuki wanted to shape us up and have us learn these forms, because we weren't so into the forms. We just wanted to sit, meditate and listen to him and do our other counterculture things, which I will not get into right now. Suzuki said to me, I'm going to make you Chino's attendant. And I thought, oh, okay. And he said, yes, you can learn lots of things from Chino. He will teach you something every day. And I thought, oh, okay, I can learn how to do the ritual better and be a little less awkward. That's cool. Because Chino embodied ritual. It was like a dance for him. But I had a hard time as his attendant. In the monasteries, the attendant tries to follow along and pay attention to everything the teacher does. I had to watch where Chino put his cup down so I could get it back to him when the moment came. Everything. So as an attendant, this is something that's part of our traditional Zen practice. We're completely immersed in the physical because we're attending to someone else. So I hadn't cared too much about the physical dimension, but my teacher was kind of quietly inserting that into my life. I didn't have any choice. I was his attendant. And I actually got to enjoy it. And every night, Chino would invite me to his little room, his little cabin. And I thought, oh, we're going to learn ritual. He's going to teach me something. But of course, he didn't teach me anything at all. Instead, he whipped up that frothy green ceremonial tea. I just read online that has as much caffeine as coffee. No wonder we were so high after we drank our tea. Went into the Zendo. Woo. Because I didn't even do caffeine, but I did that ceremonial tea with him. Whip it into thick foam and then serve it in such a delicate way as if he was attending to me. Every evening he asked me questions about American culture, about books I was reading. And I discovered that Chino didn't even particularly like ritual. He knew it. Sometimes when you know something really well, you kind of get bored with it. I'm not saying he got bored with it. I'm just saying that later, as he became a teacher and stayed in this country, he really de-emphasized ritual. And neither of us had much interest in it. So he didn't teach me anything about ritual. But when Chino did ritual, he completely gave himself to it. And he taught with his body, the physical. When he moved, it was as if his whole being was moving, one-pointed, just one-pointed, not trying to be one-pointed, just giving himself. He was our Orioki instructor, nested eating bowl instructor. He just did it naturally, organically. It was cool. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. And once we, on a 4 or 9 day, which are days when you get off from having to meditate and work all day, we'd have some free time and we'd go down to the creek. And Chino went with us sometimes, and we'd walk a hike along the creek. One day, I remember this really clearly. This is also in my first book. There was a log across the creek, and Chino just walked across it, just with ease. I don't think he had better balance than us. We were younger than him. I think he just didn't let fear intrude, didn't let thought intrude, and just did it. That's the physical. That's the physical. Well, whereas we were freaking out, struggling to stay on the log, worrying about falling off, Chino just did it. He just walked. So that's the physical dimension. That's the first dimension. And in these times, in these very difficult times, culturally, in terms of our country, in terms of us as people, as a nation, and individually, interpersonally and intrapersonally, I think these are the hardest times in my time in my 77 years. I think so for people, as for the most part, I think so. So physical can help us. And I think I say to people over and over, every day, physical activity, please, every day. Every day, every day, vigorous physical activity. And if you can be by nature, all the better. That's how you opening up to the physical dimension of your heart mind, of your still, calm, open mind, this little tiny mind that includes all life within it, the whole universe within it, that physical dimension. So that's where Zen starts, in the physical dimension. And in a way, we could say that's where Zen ends. The second dimension, remember, physical, mental, emotional, opening, and empty full. The second dimension, the mental direct dimension. Well, in the mental dimension of heart-mind, we embrace all of our thoughts. We notice whatever comes into our mind without trying to divide it up. We honor each thought. Even those negative thoughts, there they are. We just hold them. As the story changes, we just watch it. Beyond either or, this is a good thought, this is a bad thought. Just hold those thoughts. Just breathe into them. So the mental dimension for heart-mind is both and. It's both and. So in practice period, a talk I gave on Wednesday night and Thursday morning, I was talking about the paramitas, the go-beyonds. Some people call them the perfections. The paramitas, the first with which is generous. Generous, stingy, either or. How about generous, stingy? How about being generous to your stinginess? You're stingy because you're afraid. How about being generous to your friend's stinginess? She's stingy because she's afraid. So how about generous stinginess? Stinginess, generosity. How about just holding those? Holding those. Instead of berating yourself. Instead of always berating yourself. Or berating someone else. Just to hold. And then heart mind opens up pretty naturally. Pretty naturally it opens up. And the opening up of heart mind in the mental dimension is called by Nagarjuna and his followers in Mahayana Buddhism, the Tetralemma. The Tetralemma. Things are, they are not, they both are and they are not, they neither are nor are not. Anxiety, oh, I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling anxious because you're all falling asleep at my talk. Maybe I'm not giving a good talk. Oh, I'm feeling anxious. I'm anxious. But I'm also noticing that you're falling asleep. So I'm also not anxious. I'm not anxious. I notice you're falling asleep. If I were really anxious, I wouldn't even notice it. I'm anxious and I'm not anxious. And I'm both anxious and not anxious. And at the same time, it's just a picture on my screen. I'm neither anxious nor not anxious. The Tetralemma, the fourfold dimension of mental, of heart mind. And you can take some big class on this and get all intellectual about it. But how about experiencing it? How about experiencing it? So often it seems as if minds, as if thoughts slip into our mind fully developed. The tyranny of the single description, it just takes over. How do they come in so fully developed and take over? Yikes! How does that happen? Where are they coming from? But if we do this practice of holding open to all of the thoughts, just holding them like we would a wounded bird, because sometimes they're wounded. That's why they need to go on and on and on. They're trying to get out of their woundedness. How can we do that? We can do it. We can do it. We can do it in our meditation, more in our meditation than in our daily life. It spills over into our daily life. A little harder to do in our daily life. And eventually the storytelling slows down some, not as much as you want it to, I know, but well, we're storytelling beings. So the storytelling doesn't stop entirely. The criticizing, the comparing, the complaining just kind of calms down and we begin to notice the story without getting caught by it, without being fixated. So that's the mental dimension. And we were just doing a mental practice here. Zazen, we did 2 20-minute periods. I only did the first 20-minute period because in the second 20-minute period, I decided I needed to adjust my blinds and look at my notes and things like that. I did the first period. So meditation is so important in this time. And people are having a hard time. They're struggling more. Not maybe you guys aren't, but many people I meet with one-to-one are having a harder time keeping their meditation going, and their meditation is more distracted. And they, oh, yes, yes. But all the more important to do it and also to depend on a little guidance. If you need a little guidance in your meditation, turn on some meditation app. I've never listened to one, but people swear by them. So you'll get a little guidance. So you'll get a little support. Or listen to one of my guided meditations that's online. I'm going to have 12. I've been doing this class in guided meditation. So Kim's going to put 12 out there in a week that are online. You can choose one. You can do it over and over. You can do your own self-guided meditation, loving kindness, for instance. So rather than saying, oh, can't do it, it's too hard when things are this distressing, get some guidance, get some support. So those are the first two dimensions, the physical and the mental. The emotional dimension, the affective component to heart mind, of course. The active component to the stories we tell ourselves. There's usually an underlying current or mood in our stories from which our stories arise. And if we notice that, sometimes there's a little space in the emotion, and a little space creates a huge opening. Only needs to be this much space, and it can be a huge opening. And right now, it's hard for us to experience that space because many of us are carrying around emotional guns, concealed emotional guns. We want to conceal our emotional gun. But, you know, if we're not pissed at things politically, we're worried about the fires in California, we're worried about, oh, you know, so many things related to the social imbalance and social unrest, present, politics. So we're carrying around emotional guns. So now I'm going to read to you a few stories from Tales of the Magic Monastery by Theophany the Monk. The Gun. I saw a monk working alone in the vegetable garden. I squatted down beside him and I said, "Brother, what is your dream?" It didn't seem to bother him that I should ask so personal a question, not even having the courtesy to introduce myself. He just looked straight at me. What a beautiful face he had, and answered, "I would like to become a monk." "But brother, you are a monk, aren't you?" "I've been here for 25 years, but I still carry my gun." He drew a revolver from a holster under his robe. "It looks so strange, a monk holding a gun. And they won't let you become a monk until you give up your gun." "Is that what I asked him?" He said, "No, that's not it. Most of them don't even know I have it, but I know." "Well, why don't you give it up?" "I guess because I've had it so long. I've been hurt a lot and I've hurt others. I don't think I could be comfortable without this gun." "But you seem pretty uncomfortable with it." "Yes, pretty uncomfortable, but I have my dream." "Well, why don't you give me your gun?" I whispered. I was beginning to tremble. He did. He gave it to me. His tears ran down on the ground. He embraced me. Can we give up our guns? We can. We have that possibility. First, we have to see them. First, we have to open to them. First, we have to kindly hold them. And then they just will fall away. So often our moods are changing a lot, right? They're changing a lot. The other day I woke up and saw the sun. Wow, I'm a sun person. I don't know why I ever came to this state, but that's another question. Too late now. I'm a sun person. I was delighted. My mood was up. I said to myself, "I'll walk to Zen Center this morning." I've lived within 5 blocks of Zen Center for many, many years. It'll feel great to get out in the fresh morning air and hear the birds. Or maybe I'll ride my bike and go along the lake. I got dressed. I went downstairs. I began telling Linda my plan. And she said, "Tim, it's really cold out there. And there's a prediction of rain." Story I was telling was glued to my mood, so it changed immediately. I turned gloomy. I watched this direct relationship between the emotional and mental components. And then I laughed. I just laughed at myself. I'm supposed to be the Zen teacher. I just laughed. So during these times, a lot of us are experiencing emotional heaviness. And I read something in the New York Times recently that said, now I don't know where they got their data, about 50% of Americans are experiencing at least a little bit of depression, whatever that means. But you know what it means. You know what it means in your heart. You know if your heart is more veiled, if you're more tired when you get up in the morning. Here's another story from Father Theophany. Let me tell you something that happened on the last day of my retreat. I told the guest master that I didn't think I'd be able to get back soon because I wouldn't have the time. He came right back with, "The problem is not time. The problem is heaviness." He turned and went downstairs, returning with a little carpet. "Here, take these," he said. "It's a magic carpet. If you just sit on it and let go of your heaviness, you can go anywhere you want. It's not a question of time. I have come to know this is true. People laugh at me when I tell them. Will you laugh too? All right, then stay there." And stay there. So I used to teach different men's groups and kind of emotional availability. And some of the men I taught, in contrast to the women I taught, when I asked them to talk about emotions, they could only talk about one emotion, maybe anger or disappointment. So then I would have them list emotions. Finally, when they list emotions, it helped them because they were so closed down emotionally, they didn't even realize they were experiencing this whole gamut of emotions. So we experience lots of emotions all the time. And the dimension of heart-mind, the emotional dimension, means we just open up to those. We just open up to those. And in these times, what I've been telling people a lot when I meet with them is, are you making heart connection to other people? Are you isolated in your own little bubble? No wonder you're getting discouraged. No wonder you're isolated in your own little bubble. How can you make a heart connection? Can you go to an additional 12-step group, maybe? Two additional groups? Can you reach out to that friend who might dish you, but you're going to reach out to him anyway? And heart connection. So important to keep the emotional dimension alive so we can sink into heart mind, so the mind can just sink into its natural resting place of the heart. And the fourth dimension is openness. When bare awareness is present, nothing gets left out. Physical, mental, and emotional. I call this the disappearing picture frame dimension. Actually, I didn't know I call it that, but I've been reading my first book and I said, oh, that's cool. I say some cool things in my first book, but I got those from someone else. You know, we get everything from everybody else. So no need to say, wow. It is wow. Look at all we get, all the wisdom we get from everybody else. I don't know who I got that from. The disappearing picture frame dimension. When the frame disappears, the picture includes everything. We begin to experience the openness as our still, kind nature just is. Whatever comes up, it just, we experience it without trying to split off from it, without trying to repress it, without trying to deny it, without trying to overindulge it with a new story. When we resist, we contract, heart-mind contracts. We feel like we're in jail. We shrivel up, heart-mind gets smaller and smaller. The world gets smaller and smaller. And we're leaving out more and more things in our head, more in our heads, more in our mind, and with a closed down heart. Here's Father Theophany again. I knew there were many interesting sights, but I didn't want any more of the little answers. I wanted the big answer. That's what we all want, right? None of these little answers. The big answer. So I asked the guest master to show me to the house of the Christian God. I sat myself down, quite willing to wait for the big answer. I remained silent all day, far into the night. I looked him in the eye. I guess he was looking me in the eye. Late at night, I seemed to hear a voice. What are you leaving out? I looked around. I heard it again. What are you leaving out? Wasn't my imagination? Soon it was all around me, whispering, roaring. What are you leaving out? What are you leaving out? What are you leaving out? Was I cracking up? I managed to get to my feet and head for the door. I guess I wanted the comfort of a human face or a human voice. Nearby was the corridor where some of the monks live. I knocked on one cell. What do you want? What am I leaving out? Me, he answered. I went to the next door. What do you want? What am I leaving out? Me! A third cell, a fourth, all the same. I thought to myself, they're all stuck on themselves. I left the building in disgust. Just then the sun was coming up. I had never spoken to the sun before, but I heard myself pleading, what am I leaving out? The sun too answered me. That finished me. I threw myself flat on the ground. Then the earth said, me. Father Theophany. So as we practice with the first four, as we practice with the physical, the mental, the emotional, and openness, ego identification starts to just diminish, starts to diminish, and we feel joined to what's happening in our bodies, in our emotions, in our mind, and in our interactions with each other. It just happens on its own. And when we do this, we're moving to the fifth dimension, to the full emptiness dimension. The full emptiness dimension is uncharted territory, where form is no other than emptiness, in case you haven't heard that before. Form is no other than emptiness, and emptiness constantly manifests itself as form. So the seemingly tangible stuff of life is dynamic movement. There are no things to grasp onto. There's just this dynamism of everything interacting with everything else. Consciousness divides, separates, and reifies. But everything is empty of its own being. Everything's thoroughly pervading everything else. Sung San, the five dimensions of emptiness guy, or the five dimensions of heart-mind guy, the heart-mind guy says, one is no other than all. All no other than one. So landscape paintings in China and Japan evoke this fifth dimension. We'll see if I can call one up here. I'm still practicing this, but I'm going to try to call one up. Let's see. Do I do share screen? Is that right? Benton, I see you. Do I do a share screen?
Tim, that should work.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay, I do share screen. I'll try it again.
Okay. After you share screen, you should, Tim, select which screen you want to share.
I did, and it didn't come on. Let's see. I think we'll just forget that because I can't do it. Okay. Yeah, we're just going to forget that. Oh, maybe it will come. Now did it come?
Yep.
Oh, it came. Okay, there we go. All right, so here's a landscape painting. This is the first part of it, but I'll actually do the whole thing. Well, you know, if you go to Mia, you see these are all over the place. And Mia has beautiful ones, beautiful landscape paintings. See, now I'd like to lower it if I can. No, I'd like to raise it if I can.
Use the scroll bar.
Hit the scroll button. Okay.
The bar there, the over on the right. The
okay, where?
Bar. See that gray bar there on the right?
Oh, yeah. Okay, there it is. Okay, got it. All right, now we're scrolling up and down. We're scrolling up and down. Okay. Okay, you guys have all seen these. You've seen these. But this is the fifth dimension, right? Five elements in most of these, a waterfall, mist, a steep mountain framed against, not usually a blue sky, and in the background, tiny human beings, mysterious, ephemeral, interconnected, and unknowable, the beauty and the mystery of all life right there. And we disidentify. with the small being standing alone in the background. We still like her, but we enter the full emptiness dimension. So we think we want to experience this kind of full emptiness dimension. And of course, in an art museum, we can do that pretty easily. That's wonderful. But really in our lives, when we do it and we move to the edge, we often get scared. The edge of a cliff. What will happen to me if Tim dissolves? What will happen? But there's no need to worry. Already we're the great unknown. We're everything right here. Ungraspable, uncharted, supported, and totally imbued with the whole life force right here. So one-to-one I had recently, a guy told me that he'd been sitting in his office at work looking out the window when a hawk suddenly appeared against a cloudless blue sky. Watching the hawk soar and dive and coast in the wind, he suddenly slipped into the fifth dimension of heart mind. He said, "I was in total awe. There was no gap between me and the sky and the hawk. There was no observer." And I said, "That sounds wonderful." He said, "Yes, it was." And then my iPhone rang. Fullness, emptiness, emptiness, fullness. And then my iPhone rang. That's life. That's life. Zen Master Umon said, "With realization, all things are one family. Without realization, all things are separate and disconnected." And that's what we're feeling. Many of us are feeling that in a more pronounced, excruciating way these days. But we still have the opportunity to still our minds and open up to heart mind. And when we do that, we have a sense that everything is one family. Every sin, everything, every no thing, every ant, every plant, every nasty human being. Then Umon added, "Without realization, all things are one family too. So it doesn't matter how much time I spend regretting the past or lamenting what I did or what's been tragic in my life. They're still the same interdependent universe. Isn't that cool? Aren't we lucky? The same interdependent universe. I'm just not acknowledging it because I get stuck on my own stuff." That's why Dogen's "to study the self, to forget the self" is what dropping into the heart mind, dropping into the heart is all about. And it's hard for us to do this partly because we want to be somebody. We want to be somebody. And I'm going to read Father Theophany on that now. "I had been a few years in another monastery and things were not going well. I persuaded someone to inquire around and find out what the other monks thought of me. His report, 'They call you nobody.' That was terrible to hear. Some of the people in my head started shouting in rage, 'No, I'm somebody, somebody.' Others moaned, 'No, it's true, you are nobody. You're just a nobody.' The great debate, it went on for months, all in my head. It wore me out. Somebody, nobody, somebody, nobody. One night, someone came in my room, got on his knees and put his forehead to the ground. I thought he was mocking me, so I just ignored him. After a while, I gained courage and began to curse at him. When I finally spat at him and he spoke, 'Please come to the magic monastery.' I tried to make some simple reply, but the words came out all stutters and stammers. That debate was tearing me apart. He just put out his hand. I took it and followed him. As we walked up the path to the great door, the bells began to ring as if there were a great feast. The abbot came to greet me and led me into a large hall. He placed me in the center. And the monks and nuns, hundreds of them, came and sat all around me. Someone brought the candle from the sanctuary to set in front of me. And so we all sat throughout the night." Now, you might say they sat in silence. their eyes closed. But this is the magic monastery, and my experience was different. I heard them chanting, somebody, somebody, at last, somebody, somebody, welcome, welcome. I heard the abbot tell them how I had just got in from Egypt. We were all breathing as one. Someone invited me to sing for them. I said I couldn't sing, but I'd tell them a few jokes. One said it was good to have a new perspective. Then someone called out, you can sing. So I sang. I sang the song of my life, my past, my present, my future. It was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. So it's possible maybe to forget that whether we're somebody or nobody and just be, and just be. Possible just to sing a song that comes here from heart, mind, right here, whether you can carry a tune or not. The fifth dimension. Spiritual freedom in the fifth dimension. Spiritual freedom. The physical, the mental, the emotional, openness, full empty, full empty. So my teacher said, Zen practice is like walking on a railroad track. The sights we see are ever changing, but the track itself the same because of our sincere effort to stay on it. The track has no origin and no destination, and therefore nothing to gain. Just walking on the track, one step at a time. One final story from Father Theophany about how to open up to this dimension. How to open up to each dimension. How to open up to heart mind. I had just one desire, to give myself completely to God. So I headed for the monastery. An old monk asked me, what is it you want? I said, I just want to give myself to God. I expected him to be gentle, fatherly, but he shouted at me, now! I was stunned. He shouted again, now! Then he reached for a club and came after me. I turned and ran. He kept coming after me, brandishing his club and shouting, now! Now! That was years ago. He still follows me wherever I go. Always that stick. Always that now. That's what I want to say this morning, and I'd be glad to. I like to let Father Theophany have the last word. I've been his disciple for longer than I even know, longer than any of us know.